Okay, so this this class is part of a series dealing with issues relating to death and mourning. And the first two classes that we had is pretty different from what we're going to be doing from now on. The first two classes that we had was basically deal with what happens after death. What happens to the body after death was our first class. Then we dealt with what happens to the soul after death, which was our second class. And now we're going to be starting to deal with the reaction of the mourner, how the mourner reacts to death, and what the proper reaction is to death, and how the Torah and Halacha, they guide the mourner through that process into a proper way of mourning. So we're going to start today discussing Kaddish, the role of Kaddish in mourning. In future classes, we'll discuss the Shiva period, what's supposed to be occurring for the Avel, what he's supposed to be thinking about. So, but today we'll deal with the Kaddish. So we'll read it in English. You have it in front of you. It's pretty familiar to most people because it's said quite often during the davening. But if you've ever read it and thought about the words, it's pretty strange what this has to do with a mourner or mourning or anything with regards to that. So just in English, if you read through it, the essence of Kaddish is about glorifying God's name. It says, glorified and sanctified be God's great name. That his name should be great throughout and forever. And the focal point is the middle, which is underlined. May his great name be blessed forever and to all eternity. And then it continues on the same theme, as you can read it yourself inside. That's really the essence of it, that we should see God's glory, there should be peace. And that's the gist of Kaddish. Where does this come from? This comes from the source for the words of Kaddish. They come from Yechezkel, from Ezekiel, where it discusses the war of Gog and Magog, the final war before the bringing of Mashiach. And that's quoted here on source 2. And it goes through the war about how there's going to be a tremendous earthquake. And this is now going to verse 20. The fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, they'll all begin. Every human being on earth shall quake before me. Everything will topple over. There's going to be a massive war going on. With things just falling apart, everything, the whole world is falling apart, and before the days of nuclear missiles, one wouldn't really understand what this pasuk is referring to, what this verse is talking about. How could you have a war where everything just crushes and falls apart? But this is really what it's referring to the end of days. And then in the last verse here, this is also the last verse of the chapter of the parak. It says, "V'hiskadalti v'hiskadashti." After everything occurs, after the war, after everyone sees that God was able to destroy the enemies, even though everything looked like the opposite, God was able to destroy the enemies, the Jews end up on top, the righteous people end up on top, then it says, "Thus will I manifest my greatness and my holiness." V'hiskadalti v'hiskadashti, which fits with the words of Yiskadal v'yiskadash, that may my name be great, may my name be holy. And so when we say the Kaddish, we're really referring to a dream, a hope of when that day will come where we'll be able to see God in his fullest glory, where we'll be able to understand the purpose of the world, the purpose of everything, all the events that occurred in the world through the bringing of the Mashiach. Then we'll understand everything that's really going on. We live in a world where it's difficult to see the hand of God. We don't see God in our everyday lives. The righteous suffer. The wicked prosper, so it's hard to see God, and even beyond that, in different events that occur, it's hard to recognize God. But we pray for a day where we'll be able to see that. We'll be able to see how everything is connected, where God is really clear, and we understand everything that's going on. That's really the essence of Kaddish. That's what the words of Kaddish is all about. So what I want to go through today is to give three different approaches as to what this has to do with the mourner and the mourning experience. What is it like? It's a very nice prayer. to ask to see God in His fullest glory. But what does that have to do with the mourner and the mourner's experience? As Kaddish is, all mourners say Kaddish, but of a parent, it's said for 11 months. For the first 11 months, it's really said for a parent. But all mourners say Kaddish when they're in the state of mourning. So what does this have to do with the mourning experience? And part of what we're going to be going through is giving the explanation which we find amongst our rabbis. And we'll also give, we'll provide various stories which I found online. These are testimonies about their experience as they go through Kaddish and how their experience really fits with what the purpose was. How these three different ways we find amongst our rabbis, three different ways to understand what the purpose of Kaddish is for the mourner. Really, people have felt that as they go through the mourning process. I don't want to. Before we begin, I don't want to put anyone on the spot. So it's only if you want to. But if anybody had a specific emotion or feeling as they said Kaddish that they want to share, you don't have to share it. But if anybody has, like, if they could think back to a feeling that they had, it'll be interesting to see if it's a different feeling, if it's a similar feeling to what we're going to be discussing. So nobody has to say anything, but does anybody have any recollection of what they were feeling at the time? Mm-hmm. Yes.
So when my father died, none of the three children were very observant, or traditional observant. But I made sure that for him, we said, you got to go say Kaddish for him. So I went, and I thought, every time I walked into the synagogue of Montreal, is, you know where we grew up, it's a very Orthodox synagogue, we went. And everybody knew me, and I said, you know, I'm going to my father. And when I was there, I really felt like, I realized I'm doing it, partly it felt it more for me. Because I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know where he was. I kept saying to him, where did he go? Like, he was here yesterday, and I was gone, I was talking. And I was visiting him, and then he was gone. But then at the synagogue, I guess everybody was around me, and everybody was with me, and helping me get through it. So that I really felt was like, I think at that point it felt more like it was for me than for him. Just having everybody in the synagogue around me and everybody saying, you know,
because you were with other people.
With everybody else in the community. Every morning, and yeah. Everybody was there and helping me figure out what to say and what to do. And
yeah.
It really felt like part of the community as opposed to just me and my brother and sister as just going through.
So we'll touch on that a little bit. That is also an experience which other mourners have also felt. For those that say it for the full 11 months, the Orthodox practice is to say it for 11 months, and it's supposed to be for the people that do it. They try to make it for every single time that they could say it, and it's not easy. It's not easy to be there every single prayer. For the mourner's Kaddish, it's not in the middle of the prayer. It's at the very beginning and it's at the very end. Which means you have to be the first one there to get there, and you have to stay to the very end. You know, you can't show up a half hour late. And people are they try to make an effort to not miss like a single one. They have stories of these are like famous stories of a person who he missed the prayer service, and they had to. He had to say Kaddish, so he was in Israel. So this is a famous story. So he called up 10 cab drivers. And the cab drivers in Israel are Jewish, right? So he called up, I guess he just needed to call 9. He didn't have to call 10. He was Jewish himself. So he called up 9 cab drivers. He told them to park the car. He said, put the meter on. Charge me for a drive. Stay outside, and we'll make the minyan. We'll have a minyan so that I could say Kaddish. So people go to these far extremes to... in order to not miss that Kaddish. And they also, they express this feeling that they've gone through it for 11 months, and then once they're done, so every single time they say it, it has to be with a group of 10. So once they're done, they feel very lonely. They're no longer saying this. They've been doing it for 11 months straight. They don't have that. They're no longer apart, even if they continue going to pray, but it's still, they felt being a part of the community for 11 months. And then once you lose that, so then they felt a sense of loneliness, and it was very hard. In fact, all the testimonies that we're gonna be quoting here, it's all their feelings right after that 11-month period. They're all going to be expressing their feelings after the 11 months. The reason why, parenthetically, the reason why it's not 12 months, really it's the mourning itself is supposed to be for 12 months for a parent. The full mourning period is for 12 months, because that's the amount of time that we say that a person is in Gehenna. They're in hell for at most 12 months. That's at most for 12 months. And so we'll see what the Kaddish has to do with Gehenna, with hell. But we only do it for 11 months because we want to say, you know, our parents weren't that bad, that they have to last the whole 12 months. They're not that bad. Like we want to say it as much as possible, just in case. But we're not going to assume that they're the worst people in the world.
But you still observe all the other customs around mourning into the
12 months. Yeah, into the 12 months. Yes, that's correct.
I thought it was 11 months in a day for a parent.
11 months in a day?
There's a book called The Jewish Way of Mourning.
Yeah.
And that's what
he says 11 months in a day. I'm going to be quoting from him. The very end. Not about this. The Jewish Way in Death and Mourning. That's like the book. That's the go-to book.
It is the go-to.
So let's go through the three different reasons why we have Kaddish for a mourner. So the loss of godliness in the world. So if you skip, we're going to be skipping around a little bit. At the very end, for the last three pages, I quote from this book that you just mentioned, The Jewish Way in Death and Mourning. And so he deals with these three different aspects. In a very beautiful way. So I just wanted to copy it so that you would have it on your own. But he expresses it very nicely in his writing. So if you look at page 156, in the last few pages, it's on 156. When mourners console the master. So you can read it inside as I talk. He says that when a person passes away, so then there's a certain godliness which is lost in the world. He's quoting. There's no earlier source for this. He's quoting from a Hasidic rabbi who had this explanation. But there's a certain godliness to each person. Each person has inherent kedusha, inherent holiness. They performed many good deeds in their lives, and when that person passes away, so there is an aspect of that person which no longer exists in the world. That person, what that person represents, is not going to be found in any other human being throughout history. Each person is unique. Each person is different. And so we lost that aspect of what God wanted from him in the world, him or her in the world. We lose that when that person passes away. It's lost. And so the way he phrases it is that God himself is mourning over this. When a person passes away, God is mourning over it. He too is mourning. So I don't know if you have to go that far to say God is mourning, but it's really the world itself. Everyone's mourning over the fact that this person who passes away, their unique qualities, which will not, it's so different from anybody else throughout history. So we lost that. That's an aspect of what God wanted in this world that we lost. And so that itself is what we're mourning. We're mourning over that. If you look at, you can read it. It's very nice. Just the underlined part that I underlined, he says, when God's soldiers die, he mourns as it were each man. When a man dies, his own name is diminished. His own name, the capital, in the uppercase H, is God's own name is diminished. His own sanctity lessened. His kingdom experienced a terrible vacancy. There's something lost. There's a certain godliness in the world which is lost when a person passes away. We find this, if you go back, after you read it, if you go back to page 2, this is also found, this concept is found in the Talmud. This is in source 4. It says, the Tanya, there's a certain brisa the rabbis taught us. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, this is in page 2, source 4. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, Ha'omed alames b'shas yitzias neshama. If a person is standing in the same room when another person passes away, so then chayiv l'kro, a person is obligated to tear their garments. If they're right there at the time when a person passes away, when they're right there, when they see it, so then a person is required to tear their garment. Lemaza Doma, the Gemara says, the Talmud says, what is this compared to? The Sefer Torah Shenisraf Shechayev Lekro. It's compared to a Torah scroll, which is burnt. If you see a Torah scroll being burnt, a person is also obligated to tear their garment in mourning. Because a person is the equivalent to a Torah scroll. Just like a Torah scroll is there to guide us, it's to guide the Jewish people and the world in terms of how to act, the proper way to act for God, and to be a moral person. So too, each person is his or her own Torah scroll. They represent that godliness in the world. And so when a person passes away in front of your eyes, you have that same obligation to rip your clothing. Just like it's as if the Torah scroll is burning right in front of you. It's the same thing. The person and the Torah scroll, they represent the same idea. They represent that godliness, that expression of godliness in the world. I apologize. I mixed up the two stories that I wanted to quote. So if you skip to page 4, this is the feelings that were expressed by Rabbi Yehuda Weinberg, mourning over his father, Rabbi Noach Weinberg, the famous rabbi, Rabbi Noach Weinberg. And I just took pieces of it. You could look it up online if you wanted to search it, look it up online. You could, but I just took pieces of it. And he too is going to describe how does Kaddish relate to this. Just before we get to this, what does Kaddish accomplish? What's the role of Kaddish in this? So if you saw in the article in the end, so he explains that since there is a loss of godliness in the world, when we say Kaddish, we try to bring that back. We're bringing back that godliness into the world. We want to say, let us see God. We want to see more of God. We just had a loss. We lost God. We want to see more of that. We want to bring that. We can't bring that person back who had a certain unique individual expression of God, but we want to see more of God. We lost a certain aspect of an expression of God. We want to now see more of God. We want to see more of that. And so if you look at this article on page 4, he says, our sages devised such a wise way to mourn and find comfort. He says, Shlomo HaMelech, King Shlomo, said that there's a time for everything. There's a time to be happy, a time to be sad. Why do we need a time for sadness? He says, during this period, while he was in mourning, he appreciated this idea of King Solomon, of Shlomo HaMelech. He says, being sad gave him an opportunity to grow and gain a deeper understanding about the meaning of life and the correct way to handle a crisis. He says, during the first stage, from the minute that my father passed away, it was impossible for me to even talk. The pain was so intense. The ceremony and the funeral afterward felt like a non-ending darkness. He felt that he was going without any hope that the pain would subside. At the funeral, there were so many people who came to give their last respects to his great father, but he was in a different place. He wasn't there. He wasn't able to really interact with them. And then he says, then came that moment where I was forced to speak. Fortunately, these were the first words that I needed to say. The first words that he said after, the first real words, the first thoughtful words that he said after his father passed away was Yiskadal v'Yiskadash Shmei Rabba, reciting the Kaddish. Suddenly I felt I'm not alone. I remember that I have the Almighty to rely on forever and ever. He lost his father by saying Yiskadal v'Yiskadash Shmei Rabba, that he wants to see God in the world. He remembers God. God reappears to him. I felt not only the pain of the loss of my father, but also the opportunity to remember him and everything he taught me through this special way of sanctifying and praising God's name. From that moment that he was able to recognize God, put God back into the picture, so he felt that I felt that I was starting to climb upwards and had hope that happier days were to come. Every day when I have the opportunity to say the Kaddish prayer, I reconnect to this emotional healing feeling. So today when I need to stop saying Kaddish, again, he's writing this on the last day, the day that he stopped saying Kaddish, it's an especially sad day. So Kaddish was given that ability to remember God. Originally, he didn't have that ability to speak. He wasn't able to speak from all the pain and suffering that he had from the loss of his father. The only thing that really brought him back to life was remembering God and the role that God plays in the world. And so that's what this idea is about, that there's a certain loss of God in the world when a person passes away. And the Kaddish allows us to remember God. We're able to think about God once again. And that's the first idea. There's a second idea, which we're going to in back to page 3. Sorry to move you around a little bit, please. There's a second idea about accepting Hashem's judgment. Accepting God's judgment, which is called Tzidduk Hadin. When a person passes away, the blessing we say a blessing. What blessing do we say? We say Dayan Ha'emes, that he's the true judge. He judges correctly and properly. We don't say blessings that we say in other times of happiness, which is Hatov Amite, that God is good. We don't say that God is good. We mention the fact that God is a just God. And it's at that point in time when we at the burial, there's a part of the burial where there's a concept of Tzidduk Hadin. You can follow me along. These ideas are in on page 157. This idea is written down on page 157. So you read it as I'm talking. The concept of Tzidduk Hadin is said at the burial site after the person is buried. And right after Tzidduk Hadin, right after we accept the judgment of God, so at that point we say Kaddish. Right after that, that's when we say the Kaddish. The earliest source for such an idea, this connection, comes from Nachmanides, comes from the Ramban. The Ramban discusses this idea that Kaddish represents, or that there's a need for Tzidduk Hadin, of accepting this judgment. And he explains here in The Jewish Way in Death and Mourning by Maurice Lam. He says, this is on page 157, he says, the acceptance of seemingly undeserved pain and unreasonable tragedy in life as being the just, even if a paradoxical act of an all-wise God. That's what the purpose of the Kaddish is. It is a spirit, I'm skipping a little bit, it is a spirit of recognition that Almighty God knows our innermost secrets, that He reliably and justly rewards and punishes us, that He knows what is best for mankind, and that all He's doing is for the eventual benefit of the whole human race. It is only through the difficult but necessary acknowledgement that only the Creator of the universe understands the design of His creation that we avoid becoming disabled by the Da's questioning of imponderables that can wear out our very existence. And so we say Kaddish, that how great is His name. It is a world whose ways bypass our understanding and conform only with His will. He says, if tragedy strikes, if our families are beset by evil circumstances, we have faith that the just God has acted justly. The role of the Kaddish is to understand that even though it's difficult for us to know why or how a person could oftentimes have so much pain towards the end of their lives, how a person could die, it's very difficult to understand that. But understanding that there is a Creator, that there's a God that runs the world, so that's something that we have to acknowledge and understand. And that's also comforting. It is comforting. It's hard to really know. We don't know why things happen. But knowing that there is a reason comforts us, even if we don't understand what that reason is. The Kaddish itself is not really mentioned in the Talmud. The Talmud doesn't really discuss the words of the Kaddish. It discusses the main phrase of the Kaddish. Yehi Shmei Rav Mevorach. That is found in the Talmud in a few places. So one of those places, if you now go back to page 3, is in the very beginning of the Talmud. The very first tractate, in the very beginning. So it discusses the concept of Yehi Shmei Rabba, that's the essential line in the Kaddish. This is in the bottom page 3, source 7. It says, B'shash Yisrael nechnasam lebatei kneseios lebatei midrashos. At a time when the Jewish people, they go into the synagogues, or into the study halls, V'onin Yehi Shmei Hagadol Mevorach. And they answer and they say, that the name of God should be great. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Minanei Arosho. God shakes his head. V'omer Ashrei HaMelech Shemakalsin Oso V'Beso. Great, praiseworthy is the king who is praised in his house. When they go into the synagogue and they praise his name, so God says, great worthy, praiseworthy is such a king where they praise God. Shemakalsin Oso V'Beso. Kach Malu La'av Shehigla Ezbanav. V'oylehem lebanim shegalu me'al shulchan aviyah. But now, kach, they say, he says as follows. Now that the temple has been destroyed, he says, before the temple was destroyed, whenever we pray, he says, praiseworthy is the king, who people, when people praise him. Nowadays, where we have lost the temple, we lost the holy temple, and we're in the exile, God says as follows. Malu la'av shehigla ezbanav v'oylehem lebanim shegalu me'al shulchan aviyahem. How great is the pain of the father who exiled his children, and woe to the children who were exiled from their father's table. He's saddened by the fact that they were put into exile. You have these, his children are praying to him and asking to see more of God, so then God is in pain, so to speak, over the fact that he put them in exile. And so there's a change in reaction to the way God is thinking, so to speak. This is for us to understand the power of Kaddish. That when we had the temple, God reacted by saying, praiseworthy is the king. And when we lost the temple, when we were put into exile, so then God's reaction is that the father is in pain over the fact that he put them, that they're in exile, and yet they're still seeking God. They want to see more of God. So there's an interesting comment which I saw, which is that there's a distinction in the description of the role that God plays. Who is God in the relationship? What relationship does God play during the times that we had the Holy Temple versus when it was destroyed and now that we're in the exile? When we had the temple, God is referred to as HaMelech, the king. God is the king. After the exile, when we're in the exile, after the destruction of the Holy Temple, of the Beis Hamikdash, what is that relationship? God is called Av, the Father. He's no longer the king, but now he's the Father. So why did that change? Why did he change from being the king to being a father? And so I think the idea is as follows. That for a king is a king of a nation. He runs the nation, he runs all parts of the nation. Everything's supposed to, for a proper king, everything's supposed to fit together under his rulership. You can understand what the direction of the king is. When the king is in charge, everything goes in order, the way he wants it to go. That everyone understands what the plan is, he has a certain plan, and then he puts that plan into action. And everyone sees the action that occurs within his country. The king has complete rulership over everything, and they understand exactly everything that's taking place. When we had the Holy Temple, so we had that opportunity to see the hand of God. To see that hand of God, to see what God wanted to do in this world, so then he's referred to as the king. He's the king who's directing everything, and we could relate to him as the king. He is our king. He's in charge of everything that's occurring in the world. Once the temple was destroyed and we're put into the exile, so then we relate to God as our father. Our father is somebody who we cry to. We ask for help. We go to them for help, but that doesn't mean that everything that we see in the world is clear to us. It's not like we see all the direction that the king would want. We wouldn't necessarily see that in the world. We see God as more of the father figure instead of the king. He's the person that we go to for help. But it's not easy to live in to see God in this world. And so Yehesh Me Rabba, to ask, to call for God as our father, is what we're doing when we say Kaddish nowadays. When we say Kaddish after the death of a relative, after the death of a parent, so it's hard to see what's going on. It's very difficult. You can have very angry emotions towards God. It's hard to really understand why things are happening, why this is happening to you. But ultimately, we call out to God. We understand that it's coming from God. When we say, Yehesh Me Rabba Mevarach, we understand it's coming from God. We don't know why things are happening, but we're calling out to you not as the king, but as the father figure, crying out to you for help. As if, just like one calls out to their father, to their parents. And so this is really expressed in this article which begins on page 2 and goes on to page 3. It's titled The Last Kaddish. This is source 5 on page 2. It's going to turn over to page 3. It says, "This last sad chapter, the winter of her death, led me to other thoughts as well. God doesn't care about her or me. He doesn't care about my mother or about me, the mourner. And I don't give a whit about him either. How could one feel otherwise? I watch her life ebb away quickly under the brutal strain of cancer. I have tried to forget, but I can never forget. Anger at God and at the ways of the world might have at least energized me while I said Kaddish. But worse, far worse than that, were periods of seemingly no feeling at all. The Kaddish often seemed its own punishment, superimposed and out of place. What language, just now that he discussed the fact that Kaddish seems just so foreign to him, what language is the Kaddish written in?
Aramaic.
So why was it written in Aramaic? There are two reasons given. One reason that's given is pretty ironic. One reason that's given is that you're supposed to really understand what you're saying. So they used to speak in Aramaic. So they didn't want it to be in Hebrew so that people would really understand the words and appreciate the words. It's unfortunate that nowadays we really don't understand the Aramaic, so we sort of lost that reason. The other reason is that the angels, the malachim, they don't understand Aramaic. And they don't give praise to God in Aramaic. And so we are giving this is viewed as a special tefillah, a special prayer that only we say. We say it and the angels don't say it. And this is such a special and unique prayer that only we say it because they don't understand it. Perhaps we'll explain this idea in a few minutes. But those are the two reasons that are given. I'm skipping to the next paragraph. Thankfully, these periods of deadness did not at all characterize my very good morning year. In fact, it was powerful forces set in motion long ago that led me again and again to the prayer stand to say the Kaddish and to do it well with feeling. I'm skipping to the next paragraph. Through those months, through the disbelief and the anger and the numbness, I said Kaddish with one goal in mind. Say a beautiful prayer in the name of a beautiful woman, my mother. Mostly I succeeded. And multitudes stood behind me responding in unison to my Kaddish. Yehi Shmei Rav Mevarach L'olam L'olam Amaya. May his great name be blessed forever and to all eternity. In a sense, the Kaddish prayer was meant for my mother. A mixture of righteousness, and piety. The spiritual equivalent of the stiff upper lip. There is a God despite it all. By saying Kaddish, even though he had all that anger, that built up anger, saying, where is God during this time period? At the end, after saying the Kaddish, after that, those 11 months of saying Kaddish, he says, there is a God despite it all. He ends up believing what he's saying. Though we may not see him, we want to see him. And this is how he is seen. There's an old saying from the Rebbe of Kutsk. The Kutsk Rebbe, somebody asked him, actually as he was a little child, where is God, a man asks, wherever you let him in, the Rebbe answered. My mother surely would have agreed with the Hasidic master. It was difficult for mourners. It's very difficult to see God in their state. But as we say that Kaddish, as we say that powerful prayer, so then we start to believe in it and believe that, understand that God is really playing a role, even though it's very hard for us to see it. And so that anger, you might remain angry, but at least you understand that it's coming from somewhere, that there's a God behind it all. The last idea that's discussed about what the idea is behind Kaddish for a mourner, why is Kaddish said for a mourner, is the title I gave is found on page 4. The spirit is mightier than the grave. But the idea, if you look at going back to that book, In the Jewish Way in Death and Mourning, I'm having you go through all these different pages. If you go to page 158, so this idea is the earliest source found for the connection between Kaddish, between the saying of the Kaddish and for the mourner. He discusses this for four pages, from 158 to 161. And the source for this comes from, if you look at page 160 to 161, the real source for this comes from, if you look at the bottom paragraph, there is a few different midrashim which have the following story. They have different ways of relating the story, but in essence, this is how the story goes. It's in the bottom of page 160 to 161. Rabbi Akiva had a vision. Rabbi Akiva had a vision of a well-known sinner, somebody who committed many sins throughout his life, and he died. And he had this vision of this person having to have tremendous pain and suffering as a punishment for his life. And the sinner informed the rabbi, he informed Rabbi Akiva in that vision, that he had one son, he had a young son that he left over in this world. He has one young son, and the only way to redeem him from his punishment, from this terrible punishment that this wicked person who died, the only way to save him was to teach this son to say Baruch Hu and to say Kaddish. That's what the Medrash says, that you have to teach my son to say Kaddish and then I'll be able to be redeemed from my terrible punishment. And so the rabbi, Rabbi Akiva, went to this young child, and he slowly taught him the various prayers. He taught him Baruch Hu and to say the Kaddish. And when he started to recite the Kaddish, once he reached the level where the young child was able to say Kaddish, he saved his father from his evil decree. And so then the child himself saves the parent. Through the saying of the Kaddish, the child was able to save the parent. And if you read this, these four pages are really something which you should look inside and read from beginning to end. But he discusses the fact that we have an opportunity after our parents, after our relatives, they pass away, to continue their legacy, to continue their existence in the world. They're able to continue to live. And that's why he himself has this phrase, that the spirit is mightier than the grave. While a person, their bodies are no longer in existence, they're buried, and their soul is no longer in this world, but their impact that they have on this world remains. And through the saying of Kaddish and also other good deeds, a person remembers God, and it's the reason why they're saying the Kaddish is because of their parent. Their parent passed away, and so now they're saying this Kaddish as a reaction to that. And so that gives merit to their parent, or to their relative that they're saying Kaddish for. Because they're performing these good deeds. They're expressing to the world how they want God's name to be revealed. They're showing how this is really what they want in this world. And so they're helping out their parent, that soul who's in the next world. Which is why we say the Kaddish during the 12 months. We say the Kaddish during those 12 months while they're potentially, that Gehenim, that experience of so much pain and suffering could last for 12 months, as a maximum of 12 months. And so we say the Kaddish during those 12 months to help our parents get out of that punishment. There's the phrase of such a person, of a person who leaves children who are righteous. We say that the phrase that's used, he also describes this, is not called mace, or misa, of death, but it's shriva, it's lying. They're not, the phrase that's used in Tanakh is not that they die, but it's that they're lying there. And our rabbis explain that it's because they're not dead. Somebody who lives, who has an impact, a positive impact on the world, so then they continue to live. They're not dead, they're lying there, but they themselves are not dead. The Gemara uses, the Talmud uses a phrase to say that the son is like the leg of a parent. It's like the leg of the father. So Rav Huttner, one of the giants, the great sages of the previous generation, so Rav Huttner asks, why does it refer to it as a leg? Why the leg of a parent? Why is the child the leg of a parent after the parent passes away? And so he explains that Malachim, angels, are referred to as people that just stand. They stand straight. And the reason is because they have nowhere to go. Angels cannot grow. They don't fall, and they don't grow. They are who they are. They perform whatever mission God tells them to perform, they perform that mission. But they don't have a concept of growth or falling. People, we have that ability to choose, and so therefore we have that ability to grow, either to be better, to be righteous people, or to be wicked people. That's our choice. Angels do not have that. So therefore, angels are referred to as people that just, or angels that just stand. They stand straight. We are able to walk. We're able to walk. We're able to take that and move forward. And so a child, says Rav Huttner, is the leg of a parent. That allows that parent who has passed away, who is no longer, they can't perform actions anymore on their own, but they leave a legacy behind. And they have an impact on the world. And so that child, or that relative, is able to move them along. And then, and forever. And whoever they impact in the world, not just children, not just relatives, anybody that they had an impact on the world, it'll last for generations. They'll impact the next person, the next generation. And so a person's impact on the world is not just when they're living, when they're alive, but it lasts forever. And so therefore, for all future generations, others will move the feet of the parent, of the deceased. They'll continue to move. There's also an interesting idea of the Rashba. The Rashba is one of our earlier commentators, and he says that there's also, he asked the question that there's a concept called having merit from Zchus Avos, having merit of our fathers, of our forefathers, of our fathers, and yet there's also the concept that we're discussing now, where the children could impact the parents, but that same Talmud, which says that the children could impact the parents, says that the parents cannot impact the children. That same Talmud says that. So how do we put the two together? That the parents can't impact the children, but yet there's a concept called Zchus Avos, that there's a merit of the fathers. And so he explains that what the parents could give over to the children after the parent passes away, what they could give over is, after the parent passes away, what's left, the merit is really a physical merit, he says. He says that what the merit is that they're giving over, they can allow us to live a nice life, one where we have, where we're able to, we have a home, they give over their, they give over their money to the children, and they give over, it's not just physically, but it's also the merit that what they did will allow us to live a better life, one of peace. That's what they could give over. A life, something which impacts this world, this physical world. What children could give to their parents is not something of this world. They've already passed away. The only thing that the parent could give to the child is something of this world, because the relative, the parent, is still, the child is still alive. What a child could give to the parent is something that will impact them in the next world. It's about something for the soul that will be able to benefit them with regards to the soul. And so therefore the child impacts the parent with regards to the next life through the actions of the child that will impact the soul of the parent. And when the parent passes away, all they give over to the children are the physical the physical pleasures of the world, things like that. And so that's the idea of Kaddish. Kaddish is about bringing more merit to the parent. And it's not just through Kaddish. It doesn't have to be just through Kaddish. It's through any positive action that a person performs. Every positive action that a person performs, so then that impacts their relatives and their parents. That has a direct impact on their souls. But the Kaddish is something which is designated to say, to have that something which is defined, that we're gonna go ahead and say Kaddish for the deceased, for that person that has passed away, as a merit for their souls. If you go back to one of these pages.
Page 4.
If you go back to page 4, thank you. So once we have that opportunity, and this is also discussed by Rabbi Lin, once we have that opportunity after a person passes away to continue to impact their soul, this ends up being not just an opportunity, but really an obligation. Because the Talmud tells us in this in Tractate Kiddushin and the Gemara in Kiddushin, it says Tana Rabbanan Mechavda b'chayev u'mechavda b'mosa. A person has to respect their parents when they're alive, and they also have to respect their parents after they pass away. And so I skip the part about how you respect your parents when they're alive. There are ways to respect your parents when they're alive. The bigger question is, how could you respect your parents after your parent pass, after they pass away? So ketzav. So what does it mean? But most of ketzav. What does it mean to respect the parent after they've passed away? So hayomer darishmu mipev lo yomer kachamer abba al kachamer abba mori harini kaparis mishkavo. When a person quotes something from their parents, from their father, they shouldn't just say, "My father said such and such." That's not how you respect your father. What you should say is, "My father, my teacher, and I should be an atonement for his resting soul. I'm telling you over something from my father. My father taught me, my parents, my mother taught me an essential lesson in life, something which we could use in life. So that itself should be an atonement for his soul. He's my father, he's also my teacher. And this should be an atonement for his soul." And so we learn from here that this is how one respects their parent after the parent has passed away. And so therefore, the Kaddish, saying the Kaddish for sure, certainly atones for the soul of that parent, of that relative who has passed away. And so the saying of the Kaddish, reciting that Kaddish, is a form, it's not just an opportunity, it's not just an option, but it's showing your respect to your parent, to the person that has passed away. If you let's read this. You should really read. We're not gonna have time to read everything from Rabbi Lamb, but what he says is he has some very very powerful lines. Yes.
How is do you say Kaddish for a child, God forbid, for the same amount of time, and or for a spouse?
So we designate it for a child to say, for their parents. If there is no child to say it, so then we have somebody else say it for that person. So we definitely.
Parents say for the child.
So that gets into a whole discussion, because if that parent themselves, their parents are also alive,
right.
So then that gets into a bigger discussion about whether they should say Kaddish while their parents are still alive or not. But we definitely designate somebody to say Kaddish for that person who has passed away.
So a sibling could say for.
Yeah, a sibling could say for
sibling
sure.
Could say.
A parent could also continue saying it, but when we get into issues where the other parents are still alive. So it's an issue, but if their parents allow it, so then
but
if their grandparents
so
allow it,
so. Point of view for an emotional point of view, like the comfort if you are not able to say Kaddish, for instance, for a spouse, or if there's a limited amount of time.
Yeah, so it is for it's not for as long as the 11th month period, but you still do say the Kaddish.
I'm just wondering sad to lose a parent, but it's harder to lose a spouse, and no matter what age you are, and how do you find comfort if that period of Kaddish is shortened and you don't have to say Kaddish?
You're not there, you're right. Knowing that somebody's saying Kaddish for that person,
right. You just have to make peace. You
have to, yeah, but somebody is saying Kaddish for that person, and often. If you are there knowing who the person is, and you're also in shul, if you're in the synagogue while that person is saying Kaddish, so then that also is very impactful. To respond to that also, to respond to that Kaddish. So he says here, I'm gonna try to find a few lines here, but the whole thing is very valuable to read. It says, "They who leave," this is what I underline, "they who leave worthy children do not die in spirit." It is precisely in this regard that the Kaddish, on page 159, it is precisely in this regard that the Kaddish reaches its deepest value. The Kaddish serves as an epilogue to human life, as historically it served as an epilogue to Torah study. Was that life marked primarily by goodness and dignity and nobility, or by shame and disgrace? In either case, the Kaddish is effective. Kaddish impacts the person regardless of what life that person lived. You're able to continue that life in a positive way. You're able to have that impact on that soul. And then in the end, he says, going the wrong way. When death stalks our homes, it brings an end to physical life. This is in the very last paragraph. The current is cut off. That is all. But the spirit is mightier than the grave. The thoughts and emotions, the ideals and attitudes of the heirs attest to the undying influence of the dead. The recitation of the Kaddish is a public demonstration that a parent's life was not lived without furthering, in some sense, the cause of the good. It is no exaggeration to say that the spiritual handclasp of the Kaddish has helped assure the continued survival of the Jewish people, the Jewish religion, the synagogue, and its major institution. So it continues to allow that life to continue to live. So if we go to this, and with this we'll conclude, unless there are any questions, to this article, this last article, which is on page 5 and page 6. This person says in this article, I knew little about saying Kaddish or its significance, but I read everything I could on the subject and had many questions. Skipping a little bit, with these questions, I was determined to go to shul at least once a day for the next 11 months to say Kaddish, even though my Hebrew was poor and I could not daven, pray, proficiently. He talks about how he would go to make sure that he would find a minyan, he would find 10 people to say Kaddish with. My life began to revolve around Kaddish. On my last day, I'm skipping towards the end of this page 5. On my last day of saying Kaddish, I said Kaddish during Maariv at Yavne House in Princeton. And Mincha, he talks about where he was saying it. There I was standing in the synagogue about to say the last Kaddish during my 11 months of mourning. Aleinu at the end of the service was almost over. I remained standing. It was time. It was the very last Kaddish. Yiskadal v'yiskadash mi rabah, began to tremble. V'amad divrach yirusei v'amlich malchusei, I wasn't sure I could make it through. My legs were weak. I felt like I was going to cry uncontrollably. May God's great name be praised to all eternity. I stumbled through the next few verses of Aramaic, skipping to the next page. I took 3 steps back on my trembling legs, trying to keep my balance. I bowed left, Osa Shalom Bimroma. Bowed right, Hu Yasa Shalom Aleinu. Bowed forward, Val Kol Yisrael Bimroma Mein. 3 final steps forward, it was over. I didn't anticipate the sudden sense of loss, which many experience, of emptiness, of deep sadness. I sat down for a few moments and then davened the Maariv. It was a blur. I don't remember saying the Shema or Amida. Before I knew it, everyone was standing for Aleinu. After Aleinu, the mourners remained standing for Kaddish, but for the first time in 11 months, I sat down silent, numb. I spoke to the rabbi afterwards. He said what I felt was normal. The sadness will gradually dull over the next week or so, and life will go on. My mission was over. It has not only been a part of my life, it's been my life. My mission, my deep, soulful connection to my father was gone. He's gone. Nothing filled the hole that was growing inside me. The Kaddish allows a person to continue that connection with the deceased. I walked slowly to the hotel in a daze. How could I possibly talk to anyone? He walked into the room. He had a meeting. He said a switch had flipped. The energy was restored. Something surprised happened. He was on again. My father was back inside of me. It felt good to be in front of the audience. The tension was gone. I was relaxed. The words came out easily. In the car ride home, I prayed. I thanked God and I thanked my father. Next day, I went to shul even though I didn't have the obligation to say Kaddish anymore. But I needed the warmth and the continuity. And the minyan needed me, the 10th man. He continued to pray with the minyan beyond that, beyond the saying of the Kaddish. I'm skipping, because it feels good to join the generations of Jews before me who were blessed with the same traditions. I go because it makes the light inside of me shine more brightly. In the weeks following my last Kaddish, the hole inside of me opened and closed in unpredictable cycles. The sadness continued coming and going, but gradually became less intense. And the hole gradually filled and stopped opening, just like the rabbi said. The sadness was pushed away by the knowledge that my father was not gone. He is with me today, with me every day. His values, his kindness, compassion, courage, endurance, fortitude, determination, and tenacity to do what's right, his commitment to justice and fairness, but most of all, his love is with me today, tomorrow, and always. And I'm passing these gifts on to my children as they will to theirs through the generations. And even though he stopped saying the Kaddish, but he was comforted by the fact that the concept of the Kaddish as continuing that which your parents taught you, that which the deceased has taught you, your relatives have taught you, so he's able to continue that beyond the saying of the Kaddish, that he's able to teach the lessons of his parents, that which he was taught, he's able to give that over to his children, to his family, to his community, and they then are able to give it on for all future generations. And so the Kaddish itself is what was set to say, to remember this idea, but even beyond the Kaddish, we're able to continue that legacy and continue to have an impact on the soul of the deceased, even past their death. And so these are the three different ideas behind Kaddish. Again, the first idea is to continue to have that godliness in the world. We lost that sense, that unique individual person had an expression of godliness. We lost that, and so the saying of the Kaddish is showing how we want that godliness. We want more godliness in the world. We've lost it. We want more of it. The second idea is about accepting the judgment, accepting that God is the one that is behind this, that there's a reason behind this. We don't understand the reason behind this, and we're angry, and it's hard for us to understand, but we're comforted at the same time by the fact that God, we know that it's not just random, but God was behind this. And then finally, the saying of the Kaddish is about continuing the legacy of the deceased, that their lives continue to have an impact on this world. And we do that by the saying of the Kaddish, but we also do that by teaching their values to everyone around us, to our children, to the community, and which will have an impact for all generations. Any questions? Yes?
So who did put together the Kaddish as we say it today?
So I'm not sure who put together the actual Kaddish. Do you know who put together the actual Kaddish that we have today? I assume so. The actual text is not found.
But you said the Gemara didn't talk about it.
The Gemara doesn't discuss the text. Doesn't discuss the actual text.
You don't think that it would be mentioned if it was around? As it was.
No, but the Kaddish itself was around because Rabbi Akiva, there's a story about Rabbi Akiva, his time at least the Kaddish was around.
Right.
But I'm not 100% sure who wrote that.
Because we have two different discourses, right?
There are different discourses, yes.
Versions.
Yeah, the different versions of the Kaddish. Yeah. Any other questions?
What about when you say yes?
So Yortzeit also. Yortzeit, very good. So Yortzeit once a year is also where we return and we say Kaddish once a year. So we always continue that connection through the saying of the Kaddish on a yearly basis. And so that provides us with that. We return back to that. A lot of people have that experience of saying the Kaddish for 11 months and then they have that it's a very lonely feeling after you stop saying that. And they're also, it creates a certain mindset. People really, they get neurotic about making sure that they're able to get to that minyan on time. And
it's a finite mitzvah, that's why.
You got 11 months and
that's it.
Yeah. And it's for your parents.
Yeah.
So. Okay, thank you.